In our study in this class, we have been looking at the kings. We have moved from King Saul now to David being anointed king. Is that window active? Is that my clicker? There we go. Thank you. So in our last study, we noted how during this transition period between Saul, following Saul's death, David becoming king, being anointed, there's this war that breaks out between Judah and Israel, and there's some conflict as a result of that. During that, Abner has a break with Ish in the north, and he comes to David to make a covenant with him. We looked at that. And then following that covenant, Joab finds out about it. Joab's upset Abner. He killed Abner in vengeance, murdered him. And then as we closed class last week, we noted how David mourned the death of Abner. At one time, a sworn enemy. But now he mourns him and mourns that loss. Of course, doesn't take it like Joab believes he will. In this study tonight, we'll continue on with that. Saul's son Ish-bosheth is murdered. We'll also see David's reaction to that as well. And following his death, it allows opportunity for David to be anointed king over all of Judah. Now, again, real quickly, how many years is David king in? How long is this period of time before he's anointed king over all Israel? Anybody remember?
7 years.
7 years. So for 7 years, you've had this war play out between the two groups, the factions. And now he's finally going to be anointed king. David begins his reign over Israel. We'll note that. And one of the first things he does is he goes to battle against the Philistines. And he also decides to bring the Ark of the Covenant to Judah. And that's going to be a pretty significant thing. There's some things that happen along the way that we'll talk about as well. And then finally, we'll just note real quickly, Michael, her relationship with with David. And it's not as glowing as maybe it was first thought to be. So we'll jump into that. Go to 2 Samuel chapter 4. 2 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 1. The text reads, "When Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, heard that Abner had died at Hebron, his courage failed, and all Israel was dismayed." So he's heard about the death, his reaction. He'd already done Abner wrong to start with, but now he knows he holds no hope of that. He's there in Mahanaim, with no real plan of what to do next. You go on into verse 2. It says, "Now Saul's son had two men who were captains of raiding bands." So these are his captains. The name of one was Bana, and the name of the other was Rechab, sons of Rimon, a Benjamin from Beeroth. And then he goes in talking about Beeroth. But so you've got these two captains. They know what's going on. They can read the layout, right? They can understand who's winning this. It's not their guy. Ish is... His power is gone. His reign is waning. And so what do they do? Well, going down to verse 5. Somebody read 5 through 8, please. Who wants to grab that?
"Then the sons of Rimmon, the Perizzite, Rechab, and Bana set out and came at about the heat of the day to the house of Ish-bosheth, who was lying on his bed at noon." How far?
Go down to verse 8, if you don't mind.
"And they came there, all the way into the house, as though to get wheat. And they stabbed him in the stomach. Then Rechab and Baana, his brother, escaped. For when they came into the house, he was lying on his bed in his bedroom. Then they struck him and killed him, beheaded him, and took his head, and were all night escaping through the plain. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth to David at Hebron, and said to the king, "Here is the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. And the Lord has avenged my lord, the king, this day of Saul and his descendants."
So you've got these two captains. It doesn't really explain what the real motivation is, but they're motivated in some way. They I guess assume that, you know what, we'll kill Ish, we'll then take his head to David, and we'll be rewarded by David for doing this. They really do it in a really cowardly way, right? They wait until he's asleep, there he is, and they kill him, stab him in the stomach, and then cut off his head. Very brutal, right? Very brutal. And very cowardly. And so, they, I guess they just believe, hey, just like the young man who killed Saul, you know, believed that he was going to get rewarded, right? That's the way they think. Well, how does David respond? You go on down in the text here. Verse 11 and 12. Somebody read 11 and 12. This is part of David's response to them.
"How much more when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his own bed, shall I not therefore now require his blood in your hand and take you away from the earth?" And David commanded his young men, and they slew them, cut off their hands and their feet, and hanged them up over a pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron.
So, how's David respond to them? Right, not the response they expected. Right, he's upset. He's angry. Verse 11, he's basically calling them cowards. Right, who goes in while a man's sleeping and kills him? I'm paraphrasing. But and he calls them wicked men. And it's interesting, how does he describe Ish? A righteous man. That's interesting, isn't it?
Well, he would have known him pretty well, living in Saul's house. And...
yeah. And whether or not he's righteous, I don't know. But that's how David at least chose to view him, as he's a better man than you two. You two are wicked. And he has them killed. He cuts off their hands and their feet. What is that about?
That's what offended.
Huh?
That's what offended because they use their hands and their feet to do a wicked deed. So why did you, if your eye causes you to sin?
Plug it out. So you have them hanged, and then what does he do to Ish? Again, an enemy. It is interesting, before Ish is made king, you never hear really about Ish. You hear about Jonathan, you heard a lot about Saul, you heard a lot about David. Ish doesn't really come into the picture. So we don't really know, I don't think, the relationship of David and him. But we do know that Ish tried to set himself up as king. He tried to fight David. But how does David treat him?
Well, he has his head buried.
Respect.
Yeah, a real sign of respect by burying his head in the tomb, right? And in the tomb of Abner. And we've seen just last week how he treated Abner and how respectful he was. How that he respected even his enemies, right? And, you know, it makes me wonder, how respectful are we toward our enemies? How do we treat those who maybe don't like us, who maybe at times do bad things to us, or even just aggravate us, right? How do we treat those people? You know, how does David treat them? And so you have a very different reaction here. Again, David proving himself to be a man after God's own heart over and over again. That's why I want to keep bringing these examples up, because this is really goes to the character of David again and again. Questions about that?
Not a question, but David also, just as much because Saul was the God's anointed, but he wouldn't harm Saul when he was sleeping either. Right?
Good point.
He was right in there, so that had to also flash through his mind. I mean, it just gives you a sense of his view of that. You don't go in when someone's helpless like that, and just at least in that scenario.
Yeah, great comparison. That's a good thought. You know, you do see a stark contrast between those two men and David's character and just those two events. All right, so let's go on. So now you've got a vacuum, right? You've got David. He's been anointed king in the south, but really the north is still kind of a mess. Abner had established Ishbosheth as the king in Mahanah, but how established was he? He didn't seem very established, right? And so you've got this pretty big area now. What happens? Well, David, of course, God is providentially working to bring him into the gap, to fill that gap of leadership. If you go down, go to chapter 5, verse 1, beginning at verse 3, the text tells us, "Then all the tribes of Israel came to David at Hebron and said, 'Behold, we are bone and we are your bone and flesh. In times past, when Saul was king over us, it was you who led us out and brought in Israel. And the Lord said to you, "You shall be shepherd of my people, Israel, and you shall be prince over Israel."'" It's interesting. They know that, right? They know what God has proclaimed about David. And then in verse 3, it says, "So all the elders of Israel came to the king at Hebron, and King David made a covenant with them at Hebron before the Lord, and they anointed David king over Israel." When it talks about David being making a covenant with them, what is that? What's going on there? Why make a covenant? Why not just simply anoint him king? What's the covenant about? Okay, so it's about building trust between the two sides. Though they knew what God had said about David, they weren't all clamoring for him to be king, were they, prior to this? And now they are. Any other thoughts about what that has to do with anything? What's a covenant about?
Put them on line with God, too. Now, God deals with covenants with us. Now you've got a covenant with them before God, basically, to say, "You're making this decision that I'm going to be your leader." And now you've got to answer to God for your decision related to leading the people of God.
Yeah, and so we think about covenant, that term is used a lot in Scripture, in the Old Testament specifically. A lot of discussion about covenants. We think about the covenant that God made with Abraham. We think about the covenant that God made with Saul. What about the covenant that Samuel made with David, right? A covenant that God made with David. And there's more covenants than that. But you think about the idea of covenant, and we just got finished talking about this a little bit in our Sunday morning class downstairs, was when you think of covenant, you think relationship, right? One of the most closely related things we see today is a marriage, right? Think about marriage. Marriage is a covenant. It's a covenant between three parties. What three parties?
A man, a woman, and God.
God.
Yeah, and those three all come together in a single covenant. Now you've got a very similar thing where you have David, the people, and God coming together in a covenant relationship. Covenants are always based upon what? Trust, agreement, right? Think about when you, if you're married or been married in the past, what are marriages built on? Well, isn't it those things, right? It's built on trust, right? It's my ability to trust someone else. And I'm giving you something that's very dear to me, which, you know, and so I'm going to trust you to hold that. I'm trusting you to hold my heart. And I want you to protect it. And so my ability to love you, my ability to be attached to you is dependent on my ability to trust you with my heart. Because if you hurt my heart, there's nothing more deeply scarring than that. And so you think marriage is, number one, built on trust. Number two, it's built on agreement. We're making an agreement together. What agreement are we making? Well, there's a few. But what are the agreements we make together? Yes, sir. Do you have something, Dwayne?
I did have a point. The agreement is between three parties.
Mm-hmm.
David is promising, number one, he's promising God that he's going to do his best. He's promising the people that he's also going to do his best. Mm-hmm. And what the people, as in the leaders of Israel, are looking for to make sure that David is going to be a good king, that he's not going to be mean to them because they were kind of against him for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And God is over all of this because he is promising to bless Israel under David if everybody goes by the agreement and does what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah, you're exactly right. So you've got these different parties. So go back again real quickly to the marriage thing, right? You're agreeing to treat one another kindly. You're agreeing to work together, to overcome difficulties together, right? And there's a lot in that, I know. But there's that agreement. Well, there's also agreement between you and God, right? Between each party and God. Well, same thing here. Like Dwayne mentioned, David's making certain agreements, right? Certain promises. He's promising to the people. He's promising to God. God's making certain promises. And the people have to make promises, right? They're making promises to God and to David. And so you've got this union here. So it's not just simply the act of anointing him king. There's more to it, right, with God's people. Now, we don't ask that of the president. Other rulers and other nations don't do that, but Israel has a special relationship with God that other nations just simply don't have. And so they're inviting God into this union. And so you've got this this coming together of all three groups making promises. Now, God never fails on his end. So that's secure. But the other two groups struggle at times. And that's always what causes problems in these covenants. But now he's been anointed over king over all Israel. He's going to be king for how long?
33 more years.
40 total years. I think he's 70, about that age when he dies. When you look at his reign here, you know, of course, he covers a pretty vast area. And looking at David, so it's he. Whoops, hit the wrong button. I really went. All right, so we're in Hebron here. This is where he's anointed king. But he's going to be king over this whole area, way up here, right? That's all going to be his and the people's. And so you've got him here. He's in Hebron. He's been made king. We already noted this, but in verse 4, the text tells us that he was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned for 40 years at Hebron. When we talk about Hebron, going back here for just a second, just noting where it is here on the map, what is Hebron? What's it later noted as?
City of Refuge.
City of Refuge.
It's also given to the,
Is that Judea area?
That's the Judea area, right? It's Jerusalem, right? And so we'll note more about this as we go. Of course, here's Bethlehem. We know that. That's where, I believe, wasn't it David was born there as well? But of course, that's where Christ is going to be born later on. We'll say more about that later. Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry, I looked down for a minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Where did you say Christ
was born? So Bethlehem is right here. And we're down here. This is Hebron. All right, so let's progress forward here. So the text at Hebron, he reigned over Judah for 7 years and 6 months, and at Jerusalem, he reigned over all Israel and Judah for 33 years. Nevertheless, verse 7, David took the stronghold of Zion, that is the city of David. Of course, noted because, you know, it's his, that's where he reigned. Verse 9, verse 9, and David lived in the stronghold and called it the city of David. And David built the city all around him from Milo and inward. And David became greater and greater, for the Lord, the God of hosts, was with him. So let's go back. I didn't put the map in here again, so I got to go backwards. So you got him anointed here. I don't think it has. All right, so here's where he's anointed. So I don't want to speak wrong. He ended up coming up here to make his stronghold. And this is where he began to build the city and up the city of Jerusalem, city of David, here. So right near Jericho and Gibeon. And so he begins to build the city around him years into the future. Eventually it's where the temple will be built. Questions about that? So just a little geography, kind of get us where we know. We are. So, think about Jerusalem. We often think about Jerusalem. Well, that doesn't really occur until David's reign. You also don't typically think about the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, you usually think about the Ark of the Covenant, but we're going to see it's maybe not where you think it should be, and it's not. David's going to try to take care of that as we move forward. Do you have a question? So let's go on to verse 11. I think it's also interesting to note some of the other people around him's reaction. You have Hiram, the king of Tyre. Verse 11 says, he sent messengers to David and cedar trees, also carpenters and masons who built David a house. Who built the house of David? I think it's fascinating. Hiram, king of Tyre, built him. Now, Tyre's kind of significant. Do y'all know why? Any y'all remember anything about Tyre?
Huh? Wasn't there something
that happened with Tyre and Sidon? Let's say it one
more
time. Yeah, Tyre and Sidon.
It got destroyed. I mean, theoretically,
twice it was destroyed.
I mean, the modern Tyre
is not where the old Tyre was. Yeah, so it was actually destroyed twice. It was prophesied to be destroyed twice. And it happened. And I should know this. I can't remember who the first group was that came in. But the second time it was destroyed, it was destroyed completely, and it was destroyed by Alexander the Great. Y'all have heard of Alexander the Great. Kind of a neat story of what happened there. If you go back in the Old Testament, it prophesies that when the city's destroyed, let me say this first. So Tyre was right on the coast. So if I go back here, does our map have it on there? Yeah, I don't have it on this map here. Well, I won't try to point it out. I think it's further north up here, but I'm not for sure. But I think it's up here. Tyre was an interesting city because it was right on the coast, the main city was. But they had a little small island out to the, would that be west of the coast? But it was right off the coast. And so when they were attacked, they would flee the city and go out to the island and wait it out. So the first time it was destroyed, and I should remember who it was. I'm sorry. Huh?
Wasn't there with Paul, and he said the island was Cyprus, right?
No, that's a different island. That's a much bigger island, the one you're talking about. But they would flee. They did. They fled to that mountain. They came in. They tore the place apart, but they couldn't get to them. So they packed up and went home. Well, what did Tyre do? They came back, rebuilt. Well, when Alexander the Great came against them again, they tried that. They went to the island. Well, Alexander the Great was a much more ambitious and stubborn man. And he was not going to stop with just letting them off, right, and leaving. So after sieging them for a while, after destroying the city, he actually took the materials from the city, put them in the sea, and built a land bridge out to the island. Completely wiped it off the map, wiped the people off the map. And what's fascinating about it, and I'll get this prophet for you, but it was prophesied in the Old Testament that they would, long before it ever happened, I won't guess it who it was, but the prophet prophesied about the materials from the city being used to destroy it, that it would be wiped clean. And that's what happened. Fascinating stuff. I'll get that prophet for you. I should remember that. But fascinating. So here is Tyre, long before that, Hiram the king. Hiram the king is the one that built David's house. He's the one that sent in the carpenters and the material and built this majestic house for David. We'll have more to say about David's house in just a minute, or as we move forward here. He'll have some things to say. Is Ezekiel the prophet? I believe so. Yeah, it's Ezekiel. Thank you, Doug. Ezekiel prophesies about what's going to happen to Tyre years and years before. And as he prophesied, it happens exactly that way. Fascinating stuff.
And I was thinking about where Jesus talks about Tyre and Sidon, and he talks about how...
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, so he's comparing the Pharisees' lack of repentance to the way Tyre and Sidon would have repented had they been given the chance.
And it says, it should be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon than for you.
Yeah. And so, ultimately that Alexander the Great destroying them was a judgment of God against the city of Tyre. And that's what Ezekiel gets into. All right, so you got David's house built. You go on down 2 Samuel 5:13. David was at times a man after God's own heart. Doesn't mean he didn't get things wrong. It says, verse 13, David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem. And after he came from Hebron, more sons and daughters were born to David. And then it goes through the names. I think it's interesting to note among those names is at the end of verse 14, it says Solomon. Of course, Solomon would eventually become king. Solomon is the son of who? Bathsheba, right? So she was... She bore Solomon, who would eventually become king after David. But, you know, David was not a perfect man. I don't think the Bible's endorsing his concubines and all that he did along those lines, but just simply noting that. So, we get into the reign of David. Any questions about any of that? I just thought that was interesting information that probably is good for us to know. Solomon will outdo David on the wives and concubines thing, kind of amazingly. But David kind of begins that practice of marrying multiple women and having multiple concubines. All right, so David, after becoming king, one of his first actions, we find out, is to go against the Philistines. You go to verse 17 of chapter 5, 2 Samuel 5. When the Philistines heard that David had been anointed king over Israel, all the Philistines went up to search for David, and David heard of it and went down to the stronghold. So they're coming to try to attack David. I think it's fascinating. David has just been, he spent how many years in Ziklag with the Philistines, and he had even offered to battle with them. Now he's king of Israel, their sworn enemy, and now they're coming to look for David. So verse 17, he goes into the stronghold. There he awaits God's answer. Verse 19, David goes to God and asked him, verse 19, shall I go up against the Philistines? Again, very unlike Saul, David's first initial thought is to do what? Go to God. Now, I wish David had thought about that in marrying all those women. All right? But in this case, he does, right? He goes to God, he says, he asks basically God, should I go up against them? Will you give them into my hand? And the Lord said to David, go up, for I will certainly give the Philistines into your hand. So God gives him the confirmation to go on. Verse 22, if you go down just a little bit in the text there. And the Philistines came up again and spread out in the valley of Rephaim. And when David inquired of the Lord, what to do, God says to him, he gives him a little different direction. So God doesn't always give David the green light to do whatever he wants. This time he says, you shall not go up. So first God said yes, and now this time he says, no, don't do that. He gives him actually some battle planning. He says, you shall not go up. Go around to their rear and come against them opposite of the balsam trees. And, of course, verse 25, David did as the Lord commanded him. And because he'd done what God told him to, what happened? He struck down the Philistines from Gibba to Gezer. And so David gets his first real victory after becoming king over all Israel, establishing his kingship. Yes, ma'am.
I know that the commander at one point did not want David to go and fight them.
Well, the king, what is his name? We just studied this, and it slipped my mind. But the king, of course, liked David a lot. But the commander said, no, he can't go up. We don't want him. And he sent him back to Ziklag. But now I don't know what's transpired in Philistia at this point. We're around 8 years past that, 7 to 8 years. So I don't know. Maybe somebody else knows who the king would be. I'm not sure. So God does give him this victory. They resoundingly defeat the Philistines. So David, that's how his kingship begins. Very important. Then David turns his attention to the Ark of the Covenant, and he wants it brought to Jerusalem. Now, as I mentioned, Jerusalem is being built up at this point. David's established his home there, built his house there. The city's beginning to build up around him. Now, what do we not have at this time? No tabernacle. No temple. There's no temple. And I'm not even sure. Well, I won't say that because I'm not sure. So we don't have the temple built. Now, when will it eventually be built? Solomon will be the king that actually builds it. David won't ever get to do that. Now, David will want to, and we'll talk about that. But it's not even been built yet. So I really want to dig into this section, and so I don't want to steal anything away from that. So we'll hammer that next time. We'll look at the Ark of the Covenant and then move forward in David's reign here in 2 Samuel. Any questions about anything thus far or comments?
Achish. Is that right?
Well, he was the king that loved David, and so he very well could still be king at this point. So thank you for reminding me of the name. I would think so, yeah. Of course, they bucked at the king's command to let David go with them the first time.
Wasn't the thing that you comment on David and the concubines and wives, wasn't that pretty common among the people of those days, among the many nations? And so he was sort of just acting like the people around him.
Yeah, which is the big problem, right? But I would think that's a much more of a deal with kings than the common people. Now, they may have multiple wives, even among common people, but I would think that it's almost a luxury of being king. But it was a very worldly-like thing to do. Yeah, and there were many leaders who would do stuff like that. All right. Well, before we close, just on that comment, you know, Matthew 19... remember what Jesus said, right? In this discussion of marriage, in reference to allowing multiple marriages, he notes that they were allowed to do that because of the hardness of their heart. But that was not what God's intended purpose was. And what Jesus, I believe, is inferring there is that we as human beings, or the people that lived during that time, they're the ones that went astray from God's command, right? And so David is going along that flow with all those others. Which means even a good man or good woman can get caught up in the flow of the world and get sucked into it because it's something you want. All right. Thank you all. We'll pick up in chapter 6 next week. Thank you.